It's Tuesday, November 3rd, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Sorry about the late posting, but it is election night. Had to stay up extra late here to figure out what the results are on some of the elections we're following here at the Daily Audio Stash. First of all, in the state of Maine, they're voting on question 5, and with 30% of the returns in, we are getting 62% in favor of establishing a registry card ID system for medical marijuana patients, much like we have here in Oregon, and to establish nonprofit medical marijuana dispensaries, much like they have in Rhode Island or New Mexico. So, good job in the state of Maine approving more access and better protection for medical marijuana patients. In the city of Breckenridge, Colorado, they were voting on Measure 2F, and it is winning by an overwhelming margin, over 70%, in support of the decriminalization of up to 1 ounce of marijuana in the city of Breckenridge, Colorado, for all adults. In the governor's race in New Jersey, it's still too close to call, with the Democrat John Corzine and the Republican Chris Christie fighting it out. This could have an effect on whether or not the New Jersey medical marijuana bill gets signed when it reaches the governor's desk. And in other political news, Iowa Senator Charles Reefer Madness Grassley has introduced an amendment to Senator Jim Webb's sentencing reform bill. This amendment would forbid the task forces that are taking a look at how to reform our prison system from bringing up the subject of drug or specifically marijuana legalization. There's no way we can begin a discussion of reforming our prison system if we're going to gag our politicians from discussing the one thing that would most help. So please visit our alert center. We got this through LEAP, so check out leap.cc. or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com, and they've got an action alert where you can write to your senators to tell them to oppose this amendment. They could be voting on it as early as Thursday. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere. Time now for a look at our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. On Thursday, November 5th, Joplin Normal is featuring their movie night, and the movie is The Union, The Business Behind Getting High. This will take place at the Joplin Public Library in Joplin, Missouri. Philly Normal is having their open meeting at the A Space at 4722 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And a weekly meeting for Oberlin College Normal in Ohio will be taking place also on Thursday. On Saturday, November 7th, the Missouri Normal Conference takes place at the Missouri University campus Ellis Library Auditorium in Columbia, Missouri, featuring remarks from Dan Vietz from Missouri Normal and the Normal Board of Directors, and Paul Armentano, Normal's Deputy Director, will be giving a presentation. Also, Michigan Normal is having their statewide fourth quarter meeting. This will be taking place in Prudenville, Michigan, for all subchapters of Michigan Normal. And on Monday, Kansas City Normal is having their meeting at 4010 Pennsylvania Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, including the dates, times, maps to locations, and websites for contact information about all of the events on the Normal Cannabis Community Calendar, you can visit normal.org/calendar. And if you'd like your Normal Chapter's events to be listed on the calendar and read in this podcast, send me an email at stash@normal.org. It's a Normal shout-out. For our shout-out today, we give a shout to the folks in Denton, Texas, specifically at the University of North Texas, where I've received two different emails this week from students who want to form a chapter there. Well, you're two-fifths of the way there. Just find three more of you, and we can create a college chapter at the University of North Texas. Statewide, I want to shout out to the Upper Plains, to the states of Minnesota and North Dakota. Got emails from both of those states this week, and they're looking for others to join them. So send me an email at stash@normal.org if you'd like to get involved with forming your own Normal chapter. It just takes five people, and forming a nonprofit organization in your chapter's name will help you with all the materials you need. Coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, which include a look at a Northern California prosecutor who says they will still prosecute medical marijuana in the state of California, despite the Department of Justice memo recently released by the Obama administration. Then we have two stories from the state of Iowa. First, our drug czar, Gil Kerlikowske, was in the state, and he seems to have recommended Washington's medical marijuana law for the state of Iowa. And Iowans testify in favor of a medical marijuana law in the state, including our own stasher, Reverend Ray Green. For our Daily Toker Tunes, we're bringing you some hard rock from a group called Diamond Dog that I found on GarageBand.com with the hardest song I've ever heard called 420. And I've heard a lot of 420 songs. In our Normal Newsmakers, we bring you part two of the debate between Chris Goldstein and Terrence Farley, a former prosecutor, where Chris just eviscerates his medical marijuana reefer madness. We've gotten a lot of good comments about this debate. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Northern California federal prosecutor says they will continue to raid dispensaries despite Department of Justice memo. From Mission Local. The federal government will continue raids on medical marijuana operations in California, despite guidelines issued by the Justice Department 2 weeks ago indicating the contrary. Quote, I think it's unfortunate that people have for some reason picked up on this as a change in policy, because it's really not a change at all, end quote, said Joseph Russaniello, federal prosecutor for the Northern District of California, who was appointed in 2007 by then-President George W. Bush. Asked if federal officials will halt investigation and prosecution of medical marijuana operations in the state, Russaniello simply said, quote, the short answer is no, end quote. Russaniello said many dispensaries in San Francisco and around California aren't really not-for-profit, and he will prosecute any distributor fraudulently operating as a commercial enterprise in violation of state laws. Quote, By that I mean people who are in it as if they were running a neighborhood candy store instead of running a commune, a collective, or a group club that caters only to specific identified persons, end quote, he said. Asked if federal agents are currently preparing to raid dispensaries suspected of illegal activities, Rusniello declined to comment. Quote, I cannot affirm or deny the existence of ongoing criminal investigations, end quote, he said. You know, I was just thinking that President Obama's approval ratings are still way too high. What he needs to do is to have his administration issue a memo that seems to remove the threat of federal raids from lawful dispensaries, and then when people are comfortable about visiting those dispensaries, send in a few DEA agents in body armor to point assault weapons at people in wheelchairs. Think of it as Obama's "Read My Lips, No New Taxes" moment, a la George Bush Sr. in 1988. A few stunning visuals of jackbooted thugs taking down the neighborhood dispensary in a state where 56% of the voters want not just medical marijuana, but outright legalization. Well, that ought to drop the approval rating a few points, huh? Did the drug czar just recommend 15 plants and 24 ounces for Iowa's medical marijuana patients? From the Globe Gazette, Des Moines, Iowa. The White House's drug czar said Monday that Iowa officials should look at the problems California has seen after allowing the use of marijuana for medical purposes as they consider the idea here. Gil Kerlikowski, director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, specifically cited problems regulating the clinics in the Los Angeles area that dispense medical marijuana. Kerlikowski recounted going to Venice Beach and seeing people holding signs advertising marijuana and ads in newspapers. He also pointed to reports of robberies and assaults that have occurred in and around medical marijuana dispensaries in the Los Angeles area. Quote, I would say that the recommendation for any state that's considering moving to medical marijuana is to look very closely at what's been occurring in California, end quote, Kerlikowski said. Kerlikowski, the former police chief in Seattle, reported better results for the medical marijuana law in Washington state. Quote, it was not as significant a problem for law enforcement as it is in Los Angeles, end quote, Kerlikowski said. We often hear the prohibitionists play the look at California card when it comes to medical marijuana, ignoring the fact that the other 12 states with protection for medical users did look at California and crafted tighter regulations than the Golden State. Rarely do we hear one bring up another medical marijuana state in comparison. I'm sure Iowans looking to pass medical marijuana wouldn't mind at all the protections of the Washington state law, which allows a patient to grow up to 15 plants and store a pound and a half of marijuana. Though they might want to look at the Oregon law, which allows close to the same limits and establishes a patient card registry that helps the patient identify his grow to law enforcement and avoid the arrest and investigation required in Washington to verify a patient's status. Iowans, including stasher Reverend Ray Green, testify for medical marijuana. From the Northern Iowan. According to Jimmy Morrison, who received a grant from the Marijuana Policy Project to organize patients and advocates, only 1.5 out of roughly 30 speakers testified against medical marijuana at the hearing, with the half going to Ron Herman, a clinical associate professor at the University of Iowa College of Pharmacy. Morrison testified to being beaten in a back alley, robbed of his wallet, and left without clothes in near-freezing temperatures while trying to obtain marijuana in an unfamiliar town. He also described having to watch a policeman hold a gun to his brother's head while a canine officer sniffed him for marijuana. Ray Lakers, who suffers from multiple sclerosis and admits to using marijuana, claims that marijuana helps him function normally. Quote, now we are here, and I am here, to bring tear after tear, all of us living in fear, he said, fighting back his own tears, because patients are being denied a choice, end quote. The choice Lakers said he is denied is the ability to choose medical marijuana over other doctor-prescribed medications. Quote, I don't want to be associated with cocaine and meth or whatever, said Lisa Jackson, a Crawfordsville resident and sufferer of fibromyalgia. I just want some pain relief. I want some relief. I want to live. I want to be allowed to live. I want to be allowed to be a mother. I want to be allowed to be a wife. and I want to be allowed to be a good person, and smoking marijuana allows me to do that. Is it worth going to jail? For me, it is. I don't have any other options." End quote. Yeah, smoking pot helps with your MS and your fibromyalgia. But the FDA has never approved smoking pot, and the AMA says smoked marijuana isn't medicine, so you people must be just fooling yourselves. Ignore all your personal experience with marijuana, how it relieves your pain or spasms, how it allows you to sleep, how it helps you to be a productive citizen, because your experiences are just anecdotal. We can't have you sick and disabled people smoking pot without repercussions, because then some teenager might get the message that it's okay to get high. I'm sure you can understand. Here, take these other prescription medications that don't help your conditions and have worse side effects that require even more prescriptions. You've got to do it for the children's sake, or else we'll lock you up in a cage at gunpoint. Isn't it interesting how the opposition to medical marijuana sounds when I try to express it?
"76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
At the NORML Daily Audio Stash, we believe in spreading the growing truth about cannabis. One way we reach out to the cannabis community is through 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who share our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at music@normal.org. We'll help promote your gigs, recordings, and websites, and maybe even interview you about your musical career. Now, here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. There isn't much I can find on this band from Rockford, Illinois, called Diamond Dog. The band was formed in 1999, and I found this track called 420 up at GarageBand.com. The latest gig I see listed for them was in 2003, and their website, DiamondDog.net, is a dead link. But I just had to post this track because it was the hardest rocking song I'd ever heard celebrating 420. If you have any information on whatever happened to Diamond Dog, send me an email at stash@normal.org. This is Diamond Dog with 420.
Shall we? big old seed, man. I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache mix brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here tonight?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days
and try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me,
or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope, some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my mind.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers. Yesterday, we played for you part one of a debate that appeared in New Jersey Public Television between our own Chris Goldstein, the executive director of Normal New Jersey, an advocate for the Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey, and the founder of the Daily Audio Stash podcast that you're listening to. Chris was debating against Terrence Farley, a former prosecutor and narcotics officer, and the way that Chris has smacked down all of Terrence's reefer madness points is just beautiful to watch. The videos are up online. We've got a link to them at stash.normal.org. And now we play for you part two of the audio of the debate between Chris Goldstein and Terrence Farley.
Mr. Farley, what policies should be in place if one of the bills passes in November to keep marijuana from being abused by the general public?
Well, unfortunately, the one policy that should really be in effect, I don't think we have any ability to pass, and that is, since both bills give the opportunity to change upon the recommendation of our state medical association, not the doctors, but the state mental or the state health department, can change any part of this act that they want. And we expect that that's one of the things that will happen, as has happened in other states, that there are more drugs that can be used in greater amounts without, again, having any testing process whatsoever. Mr. Goldstein made a comment about nobody dies. They always say that because it's not toxic in that nature. But tell a mother of the 14-year-old girl who lived outside of San Francisco whose brother gave her an ecstasy tablet, and instead of getting her medical treatment, they gave her medical marijuana, and she died the next morning. Tell the people who have been murdered by marijuana users. One of the biggest problems with marijuana is the effect it has on young brains. And we have case after case throughout the country, all of which get major publicity, showing that these kids, because they have used so much marijuana, have murdered people for crazy reasons. There was the lawyer in California whose wife was murdered because the pot user thought his pot was delivered to their house and not his. And there are cases like that all over. There's no way that you could start a bill like we have here and say it's never going to be misused. There is a way to do it. Let them do what I've asked time and time again. Say here tonight in front of all their advocates, we'll propose a bill and agree to it where we use an inhaler like Sativex, we use vaporization or we eat it, but we don't want to smoke drugs. Not going to do it. If he does it, I'm the first backer.
Thank you. Mr. Goldstein, rebuttal.
This is 2009-1937. I just have to make sure of that because that's the year that Reefer Madness came out. There is no aggressive nature in marijuana smokers. Those cases cited by Mr. Farley are completely false. I really have to wonder at that attitude, though, towards marijuana users out there. Medical marijuana is something that is beneficial to the public. It is beneficial to the users. And bringing up other drugs really doesn't play into the equation. But, again, you know, that is the nature of narcotics officers and people who work in narcotics. They mix these things together. Medical marijuana is a singular argument, there to help the sick and dying patients of New Jersey. It does not have any aggressive impact on the user, quite the opposite. And quite frankly, rhetoric like that, lying to the public, especially from a position of somebody who's an instructor here at the college and in a position of law enforcement, is the thing that undermines the credibility of prevention in the future. And I really do hope that opposition will stop lying, at least.
Thank you. We're about a point. I think we're going to take about a 5-minute break, let people use the restroom, take a moment. We'll collect the questions from the audience, go through them, and come back then and start up again. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Farley, Mr. Goldstein, welcome back. The way we're going to do these first couple of questions, they're broad enough in direction that I would like to ask them of both of you, so we'll go with response from one, response from the other, and 3 minutes on those, and then a minute rebuttal for each. The first question, and we will then just start out with Mr. Farley. What is the fiscal impact of implementation on New Jersey? What would be the fiscal impact of implementing the existing proposed legislation in New Jersey?
Nothing, because it doesn't address it.
All right. Mr. Goldstein, what would be the fiscal impact of implementing this?
Well, according to both versions of the bill that exist right now, we'd see quite a significant fiscal impact. First of all, on the public safety budgets of our communities. We spend money in our public safety budget right now to arrest, prosecute, and jail medical marijuana offenders. That would stop. So we'd save a lot of money that way. Second of all, under provisions of the bill, the alternative treatment centers would have medical marijuana for sale. There would be tax proposed into the sale of medical marijuana. The fiscal impact here, Mr. Farley mentioned Oregon. Oregon's medical marijuana program nets a profit for the state based on their $250 a year annual registration for the medical marijuana program. Here in New Jersey, we may be able to tax medical marijuana. The benefits could net the state up to $5 million a month.
Okay. Rebuttal, Mr. Farley.
We may be able to do anything. We may be able to fly, but you asked what are the impact of these bills. These bills don't mention fiscal matters at all. And as far as how much it costs to implement a law, that's what it costs to implement a law. And, you know, we keep hearing the same thing, that we're jailing medical marijuana users. That is such nonsense that it really doesn't even need a response. But you notice you've heard it maybe 10 times tonight, because that's the way they get these bills passed, by having legislators who have no medical knowledge get compassionate with people, as they would say, by telling people we're putting them in jail. I did a debate in Congress back in the 90s against a group called FAM, Families Against Minimum Mandatories. We spent almost a year, and Senator Schumer gave them 6 months to come up with egregious cases. And of the several hundred thousand arrests, there were six times that they said the arrest was not maybe proper.
Thank you. Rebuttal, if you would like.
You know, on this issue, people are in jail right now. There's the case of John Ray Wilson. He's being prosecuted by the Deputy Attorney General of New Jersey for growing 17 marijuana plants behind his house. he is facing a 15-year felony sentence. Because in New Jersey, even one marijuana plant can bring you a felony charge of operating a drug manufacturing facility. One single marijuana plant. That's in the case of medical patients who don't want to risk themselves and their family on the underground market and who want a safe access program. When we say safe access, it means keeping people off the streets and keeping people in alternative treatment centers to get their medications so they don't have to resort to growing it at home. And when you do grow it at home, just like John Ray Wilson, who is a 36-year-old man with MS, facing a 15-year prison sentence, if John gets that 15-year felony, that's a death sentence for John. That's what happens to MS patients, Mr. Farley.
Thank you. All right, this question comes from one of our attendees today. Mr. Goldstein, direct it to you. Since medical marijuana is beneficial, why is it still a Schedule I substance under federal law?
There's actually a simple answer to that. In 1972, the Nixon administration did a Blue Ribbon Presidential Commission. It was called, in colloquial terms, the Schaefer Commission. It was the Commission on Marijuana. They took experts, psychologists, sociologists, medical professionals, societal professionals, elected officials. In fact, it was run by a former Republican governor of Pennsylvania, Robert Schaefer, who passed away last year. They went around the country for 2 years and came back with their recommendation, which was to remove marijuana from Schedule I in the Controlled Substances Act, remove it from Schedule I in the CSA, and also decriminalize personal possession. President Nixon, on his own authority in the White House, and I've actually listened to the tapes of when Mr. Schaefer came to the White House to issue his report. I don't think I've ever heard a president curse so much. President Nixon wanted the commission to keep marijuana illegal. When they came back with the common sense recommendation, based on their own observations and their own study of the problem, that marijuana be removed from Schedule I, he did not do it. And that is the situation we're in today. If that recommendation by the Presidential Commission had been followed, we wouldn't be even here tonight.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Mr. Farley.
Well, again, we're dealing with if the world ended tomorrow type argument that Mr. Goldstein uses all the time. They didn't change it, so what? The problem is we do have it under Schedule I. Do I care if it's Schedule I or Schedule II or Schedule III? Answer is absolutely not. And most law enforcement officers would probably tell you it really doesn't belong there. That Schedule I ought to be heroin, cocaine, maybe LSD. There's no big deal, and it would not have changed things one iota. Whether this is a Schedule I or II or III drug doesn't determine whether it's illegal or whether or not you can use it illegally. It has no impact here whatsoever.
Thank you. Mr. Farley, another one from the audience. Why is the FDA's non-approval of marijuana used in the opposition argument if the FDA cannot test a Schedule I drug?
Well, there's no such thing as the FDA can't test them. I don't know where that story came from, but they test them all the time. The FDA has approved hundreds of studies of marijuana. We have a 200-acre farm at the University of Mississippi that's been there for about 30 years that if you can get approval from the government to do a study, they'll give you the drugs. As a matter of fact, they had about 40 people who were getting the drug for their conditions. Only one is still living. They all died over the course of the years. But the fact is, it's still there. There's no prohibition against the Schedule I drug, or we would have no Schedule I drugs that you could use. And there are tons of Schedule I drugs that are pharmaceutical drugs. Is there some law that happened that I don't know about that all of a sudden the government can't look at the efficacy of a drug? That, again, is a story that comes out of the rest of the fallacy of these arguments.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Well, it's kind of hard to go here. Mr. Farley really needs to keep up with his research. The University of Mississippi does indeed manufacture marijuana for a set of originally 9 federally approved patients. There are more than one alive. In fact, I was hanging out with 2 of them at the same time in San Francisco just about a month ago. They are still in that program now. The FDA and Schedule 1 and Schedule 2, this is a clear distinction. So heroin is in Schedule 1, morphine is in Schedule 2. There are no Schedule 1 drugs that are available for prescription, Mr. Farley. None at all. That's why there is Schedule 1. In fact, the definition of Schedule 1 is that it has no medical value. That's why we fight so hard for the scientific evidence out there to be accepted by the FDA today. The barriers that are out there to FDA approval are many, and it is convoluted bureaucracy for sure, but that is the value of state-authorized medical marijuana programs. Do we wait while we throw more people in jail? Do we wait for the FDA and this 70-year-old policy to end? No. We stop arresting patients.
Thank you. Mr. Goldstein, another question from the audience, slightly reworded by the moderator. If medical marijuana is passed, what restrictions and safeguards will be put on it to ensure that those who are under treatment will not be a danger to themselves or others in capacity similar to driving, as the person mentions here, or in the workplace? What safeguards are available, are written into the law right now?
Certainly. Actually, one of the great things about the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act is that it draws on the experience of the 13 states that already have active legislation. This bill has been considered by the New Jersey legislature for almost 5 years. It has been gone through with a fine-tooth comb. It has been reworded and restated 17 times since the bill's introduction. What you have here is the most restrictive program proposed in the entire United States. To make sure that no one gains access to medical marijuana other than qualified patients, the process would be this. You would go to your doctor, your bona fide physician caregiver, as laid out by the law. If they felt medical marijuana would be beneficial for your condition, they would write you a recommendation, but that wouldn't be enough for you to get pot. You would have to go to the Department of Health with that recommendation, and then the Department of Health would have to approve that recommendation, at which point you would get a registry card, and then you would go to an alternative treatment center to acquire your medicine. As far as safeguards, within the bill, it outlines that you cannot operate an aircraft, a motor vehicle, or a boat while you're using your medical marijuana, just like we wouldn't want anyone operating an aircraft, a boat, or a motor vehicle if they were taking codeine cold medicine during the day as well. It's a standard recommendation for many medications and therapies out there. In fact, if you're put into a sauna and given a massage at a chiropractor's office, they recommend you not drive after that too. So the safeguards are built within the bill. It outlines that already. But also more important within the bill are the protections for the physicians and the patients themselves. Physicians and patients can't be sanctioned for recommending marijuana. Physicians can't be thrown out off their board certifications for recommending marijuana for their patients. Patients can't be sanctioned by their business unions for actually using medical marijuana. So in many ways, this bill is actually stronger than other states. It takes away the discrimination that exists in some states still for medical marijuana users today. I think that this bill, the New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act, and you're speaking with someone who has read cover to cover, and I know this bill by heart, about 16 pieces of medical marijuana legislation. You won't find anything much more rock solid than the Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act of New Jersey. We're actually very lucky. Our legislators have very carefully crafted this bill to make sure that it is the safest, most accessible bill in the United States we've got.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Mr. Farley.
I'd like to know what bill he's talking about, because we have 2, and among his group, there's a huge fight over the restrictions. The first bill was very much like California. The second bill is very much like Rhode Island, much more restrictive, and they're now fighting between themselves to get the less restrictive bill. And as far as safeguards, the question you asked, which he ignored completely, what safeguards? There's not a single safeguard in this bill that has any meaning whatsoever. He mentions you can't operate a plane. Well, you can't do that with alcohol either, But we know from studies in the United States and other countries that people are as likely to use alcohol, or excuse me, use marijuana as they are alcohol and operate a vehicle. And the numbers are astronomical.
Thank you.
All right, question for you, Mr. Farley, from the audience. Why does the way a person receives this medicinal marijuana matter? For instance, vaporization or edible. Either way, you are receiving the marijuana.
It matters because it shows that this is a hoax, that these people who want this bill absolutely refuse. I've given Chris four or five opportunities tonight to say he would go along with a bill that didn't include smokable marijuana. It shows that this is their red herring, as they've called it for the last 25 years, and they want people who want to smoke dope. And those are the people they expect to support their position. Fact of the matter is, they'll never get that passed, and they know it. If it's so important, and it's so good, and does all these wonderful things, why not just agree on the method of administration? We know that smoking is the worst possible thing that a sick person could do. It affects your immune system, many, many other systems. And every medical association in the world says you do not take a medicine by smoking it, that it's deleterious on its own just being smoked. That's why it's important.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Mr. Goldstein.
Marijuana does not impact your immune system in a negative fashion. Studies done at the University of California show that AIDS patients who use regular amounts of medical marijuana actually have an increase in their T cell counts. The issue of smoking medical marijuana is an important one. It is the easiest method that patients can actually utilize. It's been used by humans for 5,000 years. There are no deleterious effects towards moderate long-term use of marijuana by medical patients. That's a well-documented fact. Why would we want to advocate for marijuana to be used in a method that is not consistent with how it's already being used today and how it's been used by humans for thousands of years? Vaporization is a great new technology, one that actually eliminates the polyhydrocarbons and some of the bad things in smoke. But again, that's for the most fragile patients. For most medical marijuana patients who seek to use marijuana therapy, they can safely smoke marijuana.
Thank you. Now for you, Mr. Goldstein, question. How would a doctor, given some claims that there is not enough research on it, and speak to the question of it being taught in medical school, how would a doctor know how to use marijuana effectively, and how would the board of approval in the New Jersey law, how would that fit in to a doctor's liberty to use it, the doctor's expertise? Are we now not just replacing the doctor with a medical board, an insurance board? How does that dynamic work? First, the knowledge of the doctor, and then the board.
Well, again, the science clearly contributes to the conditions that are outlined within the bill. The conditions that are included in the Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act aren't there for no reason. They're there because they're backed by the hardest scientific evidence out there. That's recognized by both physicians as well as legislators. In fact, the Assembly Health Committee that passed this bill forward in June is led by a physician, Dr. Herb Conaway, Assemblyman Conaway. How do physicians know what to do? Well, physicians are exploring new therapies all the time. A dentist may come up with a new method of gluing on braces, and they send memos out within their medical organizations and along with the scientific research, along with information from the company that's offering the product. That's what happens today with medical marijuana. In the states that actually have authorized use, there's also a much more rigorous research happening on both the patient population and the marijuana itself. So in California, the University of California is studying this greatly right now, contributing to doctors' knowledge of this. Doctors don't have to consider marijuana in a vacuum. This isn't some new thing that we're inventing here in New Jersey. This is something that's been around for 13 years, that has thousands of patients involved with the program, and thus thousands of doctors as well. There are actually continuing medical education credits that you can get with groups like Patients Out of Time and Americans for Safe Access, specifically for doctors and nurses out there to use medical cannabis effectively within their communities. There is a knowledge base, there is a research base, there is a scientific base for doctors and physicians to draw on. That's how this bill got crafted, and that's how it will be utilized, hopefully, when it passes.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Mr. Farley.
It's almost hard to answer another nonsensical statement that there's no harm in this, especially to your immune system. One of the first reasons that marijuana was banned is because of the effect it has on your cellular immunity. I could go through tonight, as I said, 20, 30, 50 studies, Harvard saying it affects baby boomers and heart attacks. University of California, marijuana smoke was the common link among a number of other healthy young people who developed fast-growing cancerous tumors. Another study at UCLA indicates that smoking marijuana may increase the risk of head and neck cancers. And I can go down each one of them, and what Mr. Goldstein is telling you is that none of this exists. It's not true. Well, it's about time they came up with some real answers. If he's so hot on this bill, why don't we get some of their so-called research and put it out there and let the American Medical Association, the American Cancer Society, the American Glaucoma Society, let them look at it. Okay. Because they don't. They say it's not good.
Thank you.
Is there a rebuttal to a rebuttal?
We forbade that in the first round, so we're going to leave it there. Question to you, Mr. Farley, then. Why has this bill or these bills and this issue taken so long to work its way through the New Jersey political system?
I'm not so sure it's a question of moving through the political system, although ultimately it has to be voted on. It's an incredibly contentious situation. You could see what we're talking about tonight. He's accusing me of lying. I'm accusing him of lying. He says he has his studies. I know I have my studies. We're down to the point today, and the reason you even have a shot at getting a bill passed is because we have legislators who are non-doctors. The fact that there happens to be one in the legislature talking about being in favor of this really means nothing. These are citizens who are determining the efficacy of a drug. Where did that ever happen? It never did. That's the whole idea behind the FDA. If we didn't have the FDA, New Jersey is the home of most of the major pharmaceutical companies in the world. Well, instead of having to go through 7 years of FDA approval, spending hundreds of millions of dollars, they'll just throw it in the legislature and they'll determine it. Is that the way you want medicine practice? It's certainly not the way I want it practiced. These people have no business being involved in whether this is good or not good, and that's part of the reason that it's taken so long to get anywhere. And fortunately, it's nowhere yet.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Mr. Goldstein.
One of the most overriding things I always notice when Mr. Farley and the rest of his opposition cohorts come to New Jersey Assembly Committee hearings is that they're always in police uniforms with guns on their hip. They're never doctors in lab coats with stethoscopes around their neck. They don't bring doctors. They don't bring patients. They bring people with guns. That's who's against medical marijuana here in the state, simply law enforcement. There are no doctors that you will find who testify against medical marijuana with Mr. Farley's group. Also, when it comes to Big Pharma, do you think that in the state where Big Pharma is based, if they were really against medical marijuana, they wouldn't be with Mr. Farley? But they're not. And they're not with us either. They're sitting it out. They're watching. I don't believe law enforcement should be doctors. But right at the back of this room, you'll meet a registered nurse, Ken Wolski. He's the director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey. You'll find doctors, nurses, hospice care nurses. You'll find patients living and dying. But on the opposition, you only find law enforcement.
All right. Thank you. We will now move on. Rather than having any more questions, we'll give each of the debaters a three-minute closing statement, what you'd like the audience and everyone who's watching to take home from this discussion. We'll start with Mr. Goldstein. We'll go to Mr. Farley second. 3 minutes. You may go at your leisure.
The New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act has been before this legislature for almost 5 years. In that time, we at the Coalition for Medical Marijuana of New Jersey have indeed been in contact with dozens of people who have suffered because of our continued draconian prohibition of medical marijuana in this state. We believe that this bill's passage this year would both benefit individuals in this state, again, who are suffering with the most serious medical conditions and dying of the most serious medical conditions, and it will benefit the state itself. The Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act is compassion towards patients, it's compassion towards communities, and it's compassion towards law enforcement. We advocate for this bill to pass with less restrictions than we saw come out of the Assembly Health Committee, because we believe that greater access means greater compassion and greater care for our citizens. Medical marijuana is a non-toxic, scientifically proven, safe, and effective therapy. It is something that is used by hundreds of thousands of Americans every single day in the United States. People do better with medical marijuana. We want people in New Jersey to do better with medical marijuana. We don't want them to fear arrest, because one of the most important things in dealing with a situation like cancer or HIV is to be without stress, to be without the stress of arrest, the fear of prosecution, the fear of losing your family. They don't have to have that fear in 13 states. We hope that New Jersey will be the 14th state where that fear is taken away and treatment is given. The New Jersey Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act is up right now. It's in the final stage of passage. It passed the Senate in a full floor vote. It passed the Senate Health Committee. It passed the Assembly Health Committee. All three gubernatorial candidates, including Republican Chris Christie, said he would sign a medical marijuana bill. There is no better time to pass this legislation than right now here in 2009. If you'd like to help us with this bill, you can visit our website at www.cmmnj.org. Send a letter to your legislator. It takes less than 5 minutes, and we appreciate your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Mr. Farley, your closing remarks.
Whenever I do a debate against the drug legalizers, as I call them, people are shocked that I would show up because, as you could see, the room is full of people who are pro-marijuana. And Mr. Goldstein says, because people in this country are doing better. Well, let's look at how much better people are doing. High school students with an average grade of D or below are 4 times more likely to have used marijuana than somebody with an A who is an A student, and up to 5 times more likely to drop out of school. College students with the lowest grades are 4 times more likely to smoke marijuana than other students. A person who is smoking marijuana at age 13 is going to make less money for the rest of his life, no matter what profession he gets in. Mr. Goldstein made the outrageous statement that we come to Trenton carrying guns and wearing uniforms. Now, I defy him to say he's ever seen me, A, in a uniform, since I've never worn one in my life, or number two, seen me with a gun. Very, very, very rarely do we ask a low-level law enforcement officer to get involved. The head of the FOP comes and testifies. The head of other police organizations, like the chiefs of police, come. I represent all of the narcotics officers in the state, both of their major organizations. Nobody has ever come wearing it. It's just one more thing that they just don't care about the truth. And he'll say whatever it is to make him make his point here. And the other thing that you always hear, this is the compassionate use of marijuana. Well, I'm not so sure what compassionate use is, but there's a fella in the second row here whose wife died several years ago. He's a local man from Ocean County. We've debated one another numerous times, but I will guarantee you, if you were to ask him, he will tell you that if I thought somebody in his wife's condition could be helped by using heroin, I'd have no objection to it. Because we don't have objection. There's no safeguards in this bill saying you have to have a certain condition at a certain level. Again, put in here that this is for end result cancer patients, end result MS patients, and you're going to find huge amounts of law enforcement support. Their arguments have been false here and throughout the rest of the country. And that's my biggest personal problem. They just don't tell the truth.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. I would like to thank the audience. I would like to thank the audience for your...
Do you need any?
Please hold your comments until the end, until we're all done.
No, we're just kidding.
I know. Thank you so much for being a wonderful audience. It has been civil and beautiful. And thank you so much to Mr. Goldstein, Mr. Farley.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with thanks for downloading the podcast and a reminder that if you'd like to advertise on the Normal Daily Audio Stash podcast, the Normal Show Live Talk Radio, and on the Stash blog, we've got a bunch of new advertising packages for you. Send me an email at stash@normal.org with the subject advertising request, and I'll send you out the new rate sheets. We've got a rate for every business from small to big, and you'll find that our downloads, our hits on the internet, and most importantly, our click-through rates are much better than average. Check us out at stash.normal.org. Tomorrow is Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Erlingwine. We're going to be talking about driving and cannabis. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.